There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome along. It is We Are Going Up, episode 119. I'm Mark Crossley. David Cameron-Walker is here.
Hello, Mark.
Hello, David. David and Carl is here.
Hello, Mark.
And I thought I'd start with, tell us about your five-a-side games being filmed.
Yeah, a wonderful innovation from Power League Watford. There's a camera
at the forefront of
CCTV security camera in the corner of the pitch.
Actually
doubles up as just records the game, and they'll upload it to YouTube straight after. So when you're home, they send you a little email, and then you can watch your whole game back and
analyse yourself.
Well, you say it was quite helpful actually, because even at five-a-side level, you see little things that you do and things you could do better. But the thing that strikes you immediately as soon as you watch it. I mean, whenever you see yourself playing football and you play at such a pathetically low level as I do, is just how staggeringly slow the game is. When you're playing and you're running around that five-a-side pitch, in your head, you think, I am sprinting. I am running down this touchline like Gareth Bale at full pelt. And then you look, and half of the game, I'm just standing still.
And you got hit in the face, did you?
I did get absolutely smacked in the face by a teammate's shot, right in the mouth and on the nose, full on. If this camera was ultra HD and could pause, it would be like that famous Andy O'Brien shot. You know, the one where his nose goes back into his head.
Do we have Martin Taylor and Alan Smith on commentary?
Not yet.
That's what I want to know.
I think they might need to up the match fees a little bit more.
Can we tweet the link?
I'm not paying more than £6 a game.
We'll tweet the link to that. Coming up later in the show this week, we're going to be looking back on another packed few days in the Football League. And we'll be looking forward to this weekend when three Football League sides will attempt to reach the hallowed turf of Wembley and an FA Cup semi-final. One man who has been to a staggering 13 FA Cup ties already this season, starting way back on Saturday, August the 17th in the extra preliminary round, is Coventry fan Mark Lloyd, a member of Three Guys One Cup, an epic FA Cup quest to put the romanticism and the fun back into Saturday afternoon. Mark will be on later to tell us about the journey, all the teams he's seen, and to look forward to the game he'll be at this Sunday, Sheffield United against Charlton at Bramall Lane. But first, we're going to start the show this week by focusing on Plymouth Argyle. As you can see from the title of the show, the Pilgrims are on a little bit of a playoff push. John Sheridan's side won 5-0 against Morecambe at Home Park on Saturday to make it three straight wins and 11 goals scored since that home defeat to York, which we talked about a few weeks ago on the show. They're now just 2 points below Southend in 8th place, and are dreaming of a potential promotion if they can finish the season strongly. All this only a couple of years after the club came close to financial meltdown, as we talked about many times on this show. One man who follows Plymouth every week is Chris Errington. Chris is the chief football writer for the Plymouth Herald, and he was there at the game on Saturday. We're pleased to say Chris is on the line right now. Chris, a 5-0 win against Morecambe. Was it as convincing as the scoreline would suggest?
It probably was in the end. It was 2-0 at half-time and Argyle were well in control. Morecambe had a little bit of possession at the start of the second half, and maybe if they'd had a bit more of a cutting edge about their play, they might have been able to get their way back into it. But Argyle did finish the game very strongly, 3 goals in the last 15 minutes. Good value for the victory, and I did see Jim Bentley, the Morecambe manager, afterwards, and he was very complimentary about the way Argyle had played, and didn't really have too many complaints about the scoreline, I don't think.
Obviously, this follows on from a fantastic win last week against Fleetwood, who are one of the teams right up there at the top end of the division. Week before that, you beat Dagenham and Redbridge away from home. But the week before that, you got battered at Home Park 4-0 by York. So what's happened really in the last few weeks to provoke this spectacular turnaround?
Well, I suppose that's the beauty of football, though, isn't it? You know, how do you go from losing 4-0 at home to York to winning 4-0 at Fleetwood a few days later. It's amazing, isn't it? The York game was a bit of a perfect storm for Argyle. They had Neil Trotman sent off for denying a goal-scoring opportunity. York scored the resulting penalty and took the lead in the 12th minute, and Argyle were 10 men for the rest of the game. And York scored a couple of goals late on, a bit like Argyle did against Morecambe on Saturday. And you could argue that 4-0 was a little bit flattering and the circumstances were against them. But nevertheless, it was a heavy defeat. And I remember after that game, everyone at Home Park was very depressed and demoralised and looking towards the bottom of the table. They went to Dagenham the following Saturday, needed a reaction. John Sheridan, the manager, said he was confident of a reaction, and he got just that. He made four changes, changed the formation, which has been the big difference, I think, in the last few games. They went to a 3-5-2 formation instead of playing a normal 4-4-2. They ground out a 2-1 win against Dagenham. It wasn't particularly pretty, but it was a good, effective win at a difficult ground to go to. And then up at Fleetwood, they played the same formation, and they played the best football I've seen an Argyle team play for a long, long time. They played some really good football, were dangerous on the counter-attack, scored the four goals, and I think they just took so much confidence from that, and then they scored an early goal on Saturday, and away they went.
Chris, what sort of squad has John Sheridan got to work with at the moment? Those of us who don't see him week in, week out will still be fully aware of the troubles the team have had over the recent years. So has the squad become more settled now, and in turn has John Sheridan been able to bring in a style of play which is quite entertaining on the eye?
It's taken him a while. He came in January 2013, and the job was to keep Argyle in the Football League. And it was pretty much, you know, however you could achieve that, it didn't really matter as long as that was achieved. And he did that. He brought in, I think it was about 8 or 9 players in the summer, and tried to put his own mark on the team and to get them playing the way that he would want. I suppose it wasn't totally surprising that they were a bit slow to adjust, the new team, lots of new players. And the early part of the season, they did struggle. And, you know, they were mid-table, lower mid-table, and it didn't really look as though they were going anywhere. But they made a couple of decent signings in January just to sort of pep the squad up a bit. And things just seem to have clicked in the last, you know, few weeks. It's amazing what confidence and a few goals does for a team. And, you know, they'd struggled for goals all season. I think they've been the lowest scorers in League Two for most of the season. And that's why it's so surprising and so pleasing that they've got the 11 in the last three games.
Well, looking at the table, I mean, for quite a considerable part of this season, the top seven was looking like a closed shop, really, because Southend, who were at the bottom of that seven, were so far ahead of the pack. However, they've not won in 9 games now, and there's a few teams, including Newport, who've obviously got games in hand. Hartlepool, Plymouth hot on their heels.
Do you think
Plymouth, you know, is it a realistic ambition now to get into the playoffs?
Well, you know, I don't want to tempt fate, but I mean, if you can go to Fleetwood and win 4-0 and play as well as they did, I don't see why not. They're going to have to finish the season strongly, you know, make no mistake about that. They, you know, they're going to have to carry on playing like they have been, but they've hit their stride at just the right time. And I think all football fans know that there's normally at least one team that gets in the playoff that sort of comes from nowhere, makes a good run, gets in the playoff positions, and then when they do get there, then they're really dangerous, aren't they? Because they're used to winning, they're full of confidence, and they've got that momentum. And, you know, John Sheridan, I've lost count of how many times he's said it in recent weeks. You know, there's always one team that makes a late run. Why can't it be us? And at the moment, you know, the last week, 10 days, you'd struggle to argue with that.
One of the real success stories of Plymouth season so far has been the form of Reuben Reid, who has returned to the club after starting his career at Plymouth back in 2006. He's had 11 different clubs and various loan spells and permanent deals. Once scaling the heights right up the... He joined West Brom in quite a high-profile transfer. It's kind of the high point of his career, but it never really kicked on for him at the higher level. But he scored 16 goals in all comps this season, which is his best season for quite some time. So he seems to be settled back down in the West Country.
Yeah, I think that's one part of it. Definitely that he's back in an area that he's familiar with. He's from Bristol, but, you know, as you say, he started his career at Argyle. He was in the youth team, came up through the ranks. Tony Pulis was the one that gave him his debut for Argyle when he was 17, I think it was. He's always had lots of natural ability, but clearly managers, and more than one of them, have found it difficult to get the best out of him. And as you rightly say, 11 clubs, and he's been here, there and everywhere. John Sheridan does seem to have found the knack of getting the best out of Reuben. He did have a loan spell with Argyle at the end of last season, and he only got 2 goals in 17, 18 games. And he played him regularly, but he wasn't exactly pulling up any trees. And at the start of this season, he came back on a season-long loan from Yeovil Town. And I think it was up until middle of November time, he was on 3 goals. And people were saying, well, he's playing every week and he's not scoring. What's going on? Strikers are judged on goals, etc., etc. And then he got a hat-trick in an FA Cup first-round replay against Lincoln City. Argyle won it 5-0. And, again, I suppose it's that magic word, confidence again. And he's really not looked back since. And as you say, he's on 16. And he struck up an excellent partnership with Louis Alessandro, who was another summer signing. And he got 2 against his old club, Morecambe, on Saturday. And that's put him on 12. So there you go. Reed on 16, Alessandro on 12. 28 between them, you know, that makes all the difference.
Well, I was going to ask about Alessandro. He has another player that's played under John Sheridan before.
Yeah.
Played for him, made his league debut for Oldham Athletic when John Sheridan was in charge there, and hasn't really had a very, till this season, similar to Reid really, hasn't really had the best time of it in terms of the goals, where the goals are concerned, as he's a striker. But Sheridan clearly thinks he's got some potential and can get the best out of him.
Yeah, I mean, John Sheridan clearly likes going back to players he knows. You know, Ruben Reid's one, Louis Alessandro is another, Neil Trotman, the centre-back, again, played for him before. He's one of these managers that likes working with players he knows. Yeah, Alessandro, I think, you know, his best previous season for goals was about 8 or something like that, and, you know, he's on 12 at the start of March, and, you know, he made a bit of a slow start, like the team, but he's really kicked into some really good form, and you know, the last couple of games, if you'd seen him play against Fleetwood and Morecambe, you'd say, cool, what a good player he is. You know, scoring goals, creating goals, being a real pest around the opposition centre-backs. Yeah, and he's come on really well. It's, like I say, you know, the two of them seem to have hit it off really well. And, you know, that's only been for the benefit of Argyle.
Another player who's attracted a bit of attention is Ben Perrington,
mm-hmm.
who is, get this right, he's the nephew yeah. of Richard Hill, who played in the England rugby team when they won the World Cup in 2003.
That's right. Yep.
He's only 17, I believe,
mm-hmm.
But he's been linked to big things. Are you seeing the makings of a player who could go on to play a lot higher in the Football League?
He's done very well in the time he's been in the team. He's played about 12 games, made his debut on Boxing Day in a 3-2 win at Oxford United, who at the time were flying high in League Two and were really on a good form, and he had an excellent debut, and he stayed in the team pretty much ever since, up until the Dagenham game a couple of weeks ago, when Matt Parsons, who was one of the players that John Sheridan brought in January, two he brought in from Crystal Palace, Matt Parsons and Jason Banton, and when he switched to the 3-5-2 formation, he decided to go with Matt Parsons as a wing back rather than Ben, who's more of an orthodox left back sort of thing. So it wasn't anything that Ben had done. I just think Matt Parsons was a better fit for the 3-5-2. And Parsons has played the last 3 games, and Ben Parrington's been on the bench. But as you say, he's only 17. I don't think he's 18 till the summertime. And, you know, Argyle, over the recent years, they've had some good young players come up through the ranks. Unfortunately, because of the problems the club have had, they've lost a lot of their better players. I mean, the England under-19 squad has got Sam Gallagher, the Southampton striker, and Christian Walton, the Brighton and the Hove Albion goalkeeper. Both were good young prospects at Argyle and were sold. And Lloyd Jones, who's very highly rated at Liverpool, big centre-back. Again, he was another one that's come up through the ranks and was sold during Argyle's struggles. And Ben Parrington's just the latest one to come off that sort of youth production line.
Chris, I did want to ask you about that, actually. Perhaps the over-reliance on youth, for obvious reasons, perhaps, which could, of course, bring about negativity in terms of inexperience
yeah.
come the last quarter of a season when you're doing so well. Have the squad been able to bring in some older people? I mean, Ruben Reid has been round the block once or twice, but he's only 25,
yeah.
for example.
He's a journeyman at 25.
Yes, yeah, which is a worrying state of affairs. But are there older heads there which can help, you know, calm these young players like Ben Parrington at this time of year?
Well, I mean, the last 3 games have been a great example of that with Paul Watson, a long-time Argyle player, captain. He's in his second spell now, 36 years old, although he'd probably tell you 36 years young, but 482 appearances for the club, was at the club in the good times when Paul Sturrock was a manager and they rose up from the bottom division up into the Championship. He has not really played very much at all this season, but he's come in for the last 3 games, playing in a sort of holding role between the defence and the midfield. And you can just see his experience and his leadership out there. Very vocal on the pitch. Been there, done it, got the T-shirt. You know, reads the play well. A couple of people have almost likened it to having a manager out on the pitch sort of thing, in the way he reads the games. And I do think one of the reasons, and it's not just the only reason, but one of the reasons Argyle have done so well in the last three games is because they've got that role model, that focal point in the team. And so, yes, I think he could have an important part to play in the rest of the season.
I wish you to buy Paul Watton on Championship Manager. Excellent at free kicks and penalties and really good shot.
I've seen all of Paul's career pretty much, and I tell you what, in his pomp, when he could strike a ball like as good as anyone. I don't care who you're talking about, and anyone that's been to Home Park and seen Paul Watton play, if Argyle get a free kick within about 45 yards, the Devonport end are shouting shoot.
Yeah. Chris, I just wanted to ask, obviously it's going pretty well at the moment on the pitch, but we can't talk to you about speaking about things off the pitch, really, because in the first sort of season when we did this podcast, Plymouth were on quite a lot. We were talking about Peter Reid having to pay the electricity bill, and you know, and at some stage, you know, it really did look like there was a real danger of Plymouth Argyle, you know, ceasing to exist at one stage. It got that desperate, but as is often the case, the club was saved at the last minute, and you know, it seems to be a lot more stable now, as Carl mentioned earlier on. But what is the exact picture off the pitch now? How far have the club moved on from those desperate times?
They were desperate times. I mean, lots of clubs have ended up in administration, unfortunately. I think what made Argyle's unique or very different, as far as I'm aware, is that the players and the staff that worked at the club didn't get paid their wages. And that was really eye-opening, that the sacrifices the players and the staff made. Because if they had effectively walked away, there would have been no Plymouth Argyle. It wouldn't have mattered, you know, what happened elsewhere. If the players and staff had just said, look, we've had enough, we're not going to do it anymore, there wouldn't have been a Plymouth Argyle anymore. So they take a lot of you know, credit for that. They're certainly not out of the real difficulties. They've obviously got to repay football creditors, so it's ex-players and things like that, so they're still paying off, you know, money owed to previous employees. You know, they get good gates. You know, they're averaging 7,000 in League Two this season. But, you know, it's a bit difficult to make ends meet. So they're better than they were, but they're not, you know, flush by any stretch of the imagination. And probably like most clubs in the lower divisions, they're always looking to try and get in as much money as they possibly can from all sorts of sources.
Chris, you're a man who's obviously watched quite a lot of League Two football over the years, and this season in particular. Just out of interest, who do you think is the best side in League Two?
Rochdale.
Okay.
You didn't want to hear that, did you, Mark?
I support Bury, sorry.
I do apologise. I thought Bury were quite good as well.
Rochdale are in third, Scunthorpe second, Chesterfield first. How do you see the promotion running going, and how do you see Plymouth's running? Because the next couple of games are quite important, because obviously games in hand, or a game in hand, Bristol Rovers away and Wickham away, two teams that are down the bottom end.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Rochdale when Argyle lost 3-0 up there in January. So one of only two defeats since the middle of December. I just like the way that Rochdale play their football. Keith Hill, you know, it was quite an uncompromising centre-back, but he doesn't half like his team's playing good football. And I just think it just proves you can play good football in League Two and be successful. He did it before in his previous spell at Rochdale. As long as they keep Hogan switched on and everything's going well with him, he can score the goals for them. And I was really impressed with them. I think, you know, it would be good for football if Rochdale went up and maybe even won the title. Argyle-wise, they've got Bristol Rovers and Wickham away coming up. So those are two, you know, not easy games, but, you know, games that they'd like to think they could get points from. And then I think the crunch period comes then, where they've got two home games in 4 days, one against Scunthorpe United and then one against Chesterfield 4 days later, so i.e. the top two at the moment. Be fascinating to see how they get on in those two games. If those two games went well, I think confidence would be soaring through the roof, and who knows what could happen. If they have a little bit of sort of setback in those two games, you know, then it'll be how they respond to that as to where they finish in the season.
So a few weeks ago, we had Chris Phillips come on to talk to us about Southend, who were going great guns at that point. They've not won a single game in their last nine games since. Yeah. So if it all goes wrong from this point...
It's my fault, isn't it?
We're not taking any blame for it, is what I'm saying. Chris, enjoy the rest of the season. Thanks very much for coming on.
Yeah, my pleasure, no problem.
There, that is Chris Arrington, chief football writer for the Plymouth Herald. And now it is time for something a little bit different, because ahead of FA Cup quarter-final weekend, we are going to focus on the FA Cup with a man who's been to a tie every single round of the competition so far this season. Just eight sides remain then in the world's most famous cup competition. The FA Cup once again takes centre stage this weekend, with three Football League sides still going strong and dreaming of glory. We've got Wigan Athletic, the holders, who are making a hell of a defence of this, although they do go to Manchester City on a Sunday afternoon in a repeat of last year's final. Before that, on Sunday lunchtime, it's the clash which confirms at least one Football League club will go to Wembley for a semi-final. Sheffield United against Charlton Athletic. Not really the tie, I don't think, that most neutrals wanted, but a great chance for both to maybe, just maybe, get their hands on that treasured prize of the FA Cup at Wembley in May. One man who has been to 13 FA Cup ties this season, a hell of a lot more than most other people, I would think, starting way back on August the 17th in the extra preliminary round, Quorn versus Holmbrook Sports, big game. In the preliminary round for the first qualifying round is Coventry fan Mark Lloyd, who is a member of Three Guys One Cup, an epic FA Cup quest. And Mark will be there at Bramall Lane on Sunday, and we're pleased to say he's on the phone right now to explain more about this. Mark, thank you very much for coming on the show. Firstly,
no problem.
Tell us how on earth this whole idea came about in the to begin with.
We just sort of sitting down the pub one day, and it's one of those ideas that comes up, and it's one of those sort of things where I guess it just materialised, rather than just most things that seem pipe dreams and just chat. And then, you know, we thought, actually, let's do this. It sounds quite fun, quite exciting. And then we thought, let's get a website up and keep us motivated, keep us going through the Tuesday night replays in Lincoln and all those sort of things we anticipated. And I guess there's a bit of it as well. We'd all become a bit disillusioned with the football clubs we supported and going to big games, and especially me being a Coventry City fan, I think anyone can relate to what's going on in my club at the minute. So it just seems, you know, a good idea to get the magic back into the FA Cup and find a bit of love for football again this season, and hopefully take a few people on the journey with us.
I mean, it's incredible to think that the FA Cup starts in August, really. And you really have plumbed the depths of British football right down the bottom of the pyramid. Quorn FC, and they are honestly a team I've never heard of before. I mean, is that a place, Quorn? Or is it a tie-in with the fake sausages?
Yeah. No, it's not actually. They don't even sponsor them, which I think they should. It'd
missed opportunity.
Exactly, yeah. No, it's quite, you know, one of those little villages around Leicestershire that's quite affluent. So the club itself got a bit of money, actually. They've got a nice clubhouse and stuff. But Quorn is an actual place. Most people I tell us about think I'm making it up as well. But yeah, it does start right down in the depths of football, and we've been, you know, there's some really, really minnow teams.
Holbrook Sports, well, you know you're an amateur side when you've got sports in your name. But a 5-1 thumping victory for Quorn in the first game, a great way to start.
Yeah, it was a good game, though, actually. We quite excited, a lot of goals, and from that we built a bit of a rapport with the lads who play down at Quorn, because we were tweeting during the game and they sort of picked up on it straight away. So we still talk to them quite a bit, you know, about how we're getting on and what could have been for Quorn FC if they've carried on winning.
So you followed them into the preliminary first round, which was away at, is it Basford, Baseford?
Baseford United, yeah. Okay. We went into a replay. We were there with our first replay. So could the Three Guys One Cup cut it on a cold Tuesday night in Quorn? Was questions everyone was asking. But it was a good game. It went all the way to extra time, penalties. The Baseford United keeper was bloody annoyed about that. He just audibly, to be said, I just want to go home. that was a good game.
Sounds like been better than some of the ITV4 FA Cup replays that have been shown, so maybe they should have televised that one.
yeah, exactly. I mean, there was at one point that's in that game when someone in the clubhouse had put Holby City on the TV, and that visibly divided the crowd with about 30-40% going into just watch the TV instead.
Okay, so let's follow this through. So Baseford went through on penalties in that. Then they went to, they hosted Matlock Town in the first qualifying round, and Matlock won that, and then you went to Carlton in the next round.
Carlton, yeah. I mean, the Matlock Baseford game was pretty interesting as well, because we, Matlock, I don't know how many of your listeners know your your lower league pyramids, but Matlock are a good couple of leagues above Basford United. So we thought, you know, it's got to be a bit of a trouncing. But Basford turned up, you know, went at Matlock and a couple of pacey wingers and, you know, caused them some trouble. But yeah, Matlock went on to win and then went on to Carlton, where they did lose actually to someone in the league below them. So
at this point, I'm going to dispense with talking about the lower league football and focus on your the cup cuisine, which I've been enjoying reading about on the web. Excellent website, I must add, as well.
You've
really experienced some culinary delights on your travels this season, haven't you? What's been the pick of the bunch?
It's weird that you talk about this, actually. We were on Colin Murray's Talk Sport show last week, and this is all he wanted to talk about. It was really strange. He was like, so Mark, you're doing a whole food thing around with the FA Cup? And I was like, no, it's not just about food, Colin. It's more than that. It's pretty annoying. But yeah, you know, I think the Balti pie at Hillsborough has actually been really good. Just a recent one. That was a pretty good one. I think there was a pretty good Twix we had down at Matlock Town.
Twix?
That was quite nice. Yeah, it's pretty good Twix we all shared.
The worst bit of food?
Oh, there was a game at Carlton Town where I just ordered a nice big plate of chips with mayo, and I thought, oh, this will go down well. Just what I need right now. And there was a big pot of what I thought was salt next to the next to the lady giving out the chips. So I was like, yeah, just sprinkle a bit of that on. About halfway through, I was like, this tastes a bit odd. Offered it out to the other two of the three guys, where we concluded that I'd actually put sugar on my chips instead of salt.
Good. An easy mistake to make.
So let's try and fly through this route. You went to Carlton against Vauxhall Motors.
Excellent. Vauxhall Motors, yes, a stalwart lower league
side. Yes, proper FA Cup side. So Vauxhall went through. They played at Macclesfield, got hammered 7-0. And then you ended up watching in the first round proper, which is obviously where most Football League sides come in, Macclesfield against Swindon, Carl's team here.
Yeah, Swindon were pretty rubbish.
Yeah, Macclesfield upset the odds.
They did, yeah. I mean, we saw Macclesfield play against Vauxhall Motors and they blew it away. You know, they get the ball down and play really well on the ground, and I think when teams put them under pressure we saw them struggle, but you know, Vauxhall definitely didn't do that, and Swindon didn't do that either. And you know, Swindon never looked like they were in the game, to be honest, especially having been two leagues above them. Yeah, no chance. But Vauxhall, when we went to that game, one of the lads had put a bet on Matlock to win 6-0, and I spent the whole day tearing into him about why he'd put that on, what a waste of money it was. And then when they went 7-0 up, that's when Matlock decided to just sit at the back and just stroke it around the back four. Much to my hilarity.
Have you put a bet on every game you've been to? Could you put a bet on Corn versus Holbrook Sports? I'm sure most betting websites would have probably had some kind of syndicate.
On the Bet365.
Yeah, be on Bet365 on the betting play. Have you been able to? Have you bet on most of these games, or is it just something that's coming in the later games?
Yeah, I think most of the games we managed to put a bet on. I remember going into Ladbrokes, actually, one of the early games. I think it might have been Carlton Matlock, and putting a 3-0 win on Matlock to win. I got a pretty funny look from the woman who worked in Leicester Ladbrokes, having never been there either herself. But yeah, I think most of the games have been down.
Breaking news. Betting on Carlton Matlock has been suspended due to unusual betting patterns of what one bet.
Mark, you've been sort of basically following Sheffield Wednesday, haven't you, for quite a while in this competition?
Well, before you get to that, you see Macclesfield five times, including the replay, so you must have been a bit disappointed to see them go out. Did you develop any sort of affection for them?
You think that, but I was
that's a no.
Go, to be honest, I was sick of going all the way up to Macclesfield every week. We did this sort of going into it thinking, oh, this could be awful. You know, one week we could be up in Carlisle, then down at Plymouth, all over the country, racking up miles and miles and miles. Or worse, we could just end up going to Macclesfield every week. Who knows?
So Macclesfield went out to Sheffield Wednesday in the replay at Hillsborough, and then Sheffield Wednesday won at Rochdale, and then they went into the game against who were they playing last week? I forgot. Charlton, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So you were at that game last week, and were you secretly hoping for a Sheffield derby in the quarterfinal?
Oh, nothing really. Well, I was quite secretly hoping for one, yeah, because I had to get the Charlton fan away bus up from London to get to the game in time. So I left at like 1 p.m. and just sat with Charlton fans the whole way, not really daring to mention that I wasn't a Charlton fan myself.
Did you have to sing and stuff? Did you go over the whole hog and sing, chant the songs and wear a scarf?
I did on the way back a little bit. I got up because I had a few beers and I was sort of in the mood. And then when everyone was singing, "We're all going to Wembley," I was like, go on then. Why not?
Well, you are. Yeah. I mean, you're the only person on that bus that can definitely say you are going to Wembley.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking. I was like, I'm guaranteed. You lot, maybe not.
There's this weird anomaly, of course. You've not played a Premier League team
Yeah, which, he's not played, which is, seen which, a Premier League team.
Which is wonderful for a Football League podcast like ourselves to have you on. Are you a little bit disappointed you've not seen a major giant killing? I suppose Macclesfield destroying Swindon is probably the nearest thing you've seen to a giant killing.
You're a little bit upset you've not seen... Exactly.
Two midgets stabbing each other with blunt instruments.
Sleeping giants, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's a little bit of the romance of the cup. Just missing slightly. Do you want to see a big upset still?
Well, you know, it was all going to plan, really. We thought, you know, the steady progression up. We didn't want to get a big team really early and then end up seeing Man City every time, you know. But I think, similarly, you don't want lower league teams all the way up. But it's been quite nice, actually, you know. I think it's not going to happen in every season. It's really rare to get through the whole thing. I mean, we won't even go to a Premier League ground. We'll see some Premier League teams in the semis and the final, but we won't be able to go to any Premier League grounds without counting Wembley. But it's pretty rare. But it's been quite good, actually, because, you know, those lower league games and those lower league teams is what the cup's all about.
Absolutely.
Really, it's like anyone can win it and anyone can get to the final, and that's what makes it like no other tournament, I think.
Who do you fancy to win on Sunday?
I don't know. I quite like to see Sheffield United, I think. Yeah, after the 10-hour bus journey that Charlton fans put me through and the keeping the radio on and just keeping chanting until about 2 a.m. when I was back, until I got back to London, I think I'd like to see them go out after that, I think.
how much did a ticket cost to go and see Korn, by the way?
Korn first game, I think that was £4.
How much would it cost £4 to go to the final?
Well, it's a bit of a variance, but I think it's probably going to cost us about 75 each, somewhere around that.
Will that be a nosebleed seat, or are you going to, why don't you go all out and try and get a Club Wembley seat?
Yeah, I might email the FA actually and see if they can sort me out.
Definitely. We'll start the campaign. Yeah. You should be front and centre. You're presenting the winners with the trophy.
Yeah, exactly. Get on pitch at half time.
Walk along by me.
Walk along down the line. Before you go, Mark, we should talk to you a little bit about Coventry. You did mention you were a little bit disillusioned there at the start of the conversation. They drew 0-0 with Shrewsbury on Sunday, and I think they're down in 13th now. I mean, at one stage, it did look like, despite the points deduction and everything that had gone with the move to Northampton, they're actually going to have quite a good season and get into the playoffs, but it's kind of petered out a bit.
Yeah, I think as a Coventry fan, you know, one character trait that never dies with you is a naive amount of optimism, where you think a good run of form is a sign of consistency and maybe a good season is on the horizon, but it never really materialises, and there's always something that comes along to bugger that right up. But, you know, I think what I was getting at earlier is just what's gone on in the club recently, which I, most football fans, especially probably listening to this show, are familiar with, is that Coventry have been taken out of their grounds and we've been forced to play our home games in Northampton, all really from disagreements that have happened between businessmen at that board level. And it's quite disgusting to see, on a serious note, to see a club ripped out of its community like that. So anyone listening, go on, sign the petition, Coventry back playing in Coventry and back at the Rico.
And if you go to threeguysonecup.co.uk, you can follow and read about this story that Mark has been on. The two other guys you're on with, who are they, by the way?
Steve and Josh, yeah. So we're all living or working together up in Leicester when we started. We've been to every game together since then.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, enjoy Sunday, mate, and maybe we'll catch up with you again around the time of the final if there's a Football League side still in there.
Thanks,
Matt. Cheers, mate. Take care.
Thanks.
That's Mark Lloyd, who is a member of Three Guys, One Cup. And as I said, it's well worth going to that website if you can. Right now, it's time for My Club, the part of the show where we give Football League fans 125 seconds to celebrate their side or to celebrate the 125th anniversary of the Football League. And today, it is the turn of Yeovil.
This is We Are Going Up. My Club in 125 seconds.
Hello, I'm Peter Bryars and my club is Yeovil.
So, Peter, do you remember your first ever visit to Hewish Park?
I do, and it wasn't a great one. It was the 94 season when we went down and we lost 2-1 at home to Macclesfield, who ended up going up. So it wasn't the greatest start, but things sort of picked up in future years.
Things have certainly picked up in recent years. You're right, Peter. What's your favourite moment as a Yeovil fan?
As a Yeovil fan, especially living in the Midlands in Nottingham, the second playoff game against Nottingham Forest, where we were 2-0 down and beat them 5-2 on the night in extra time, was just... It's one of those unforgettable nights.
Of all the promotions that you've had over the years, I don't know if you've been to all of them. Can you pinpoint like a fantastic moment that you had as a Yeovil fan from that rise from the conference to where you're now in the Championship?
It was the moment we actually came out of non-league football. It was an evening game away at Doncaster at Bellevue, and we actually clinched promotion just before the game kicked off because the results went our way. Doncaster are our main rivals, and we beat them 4-0 on the night. It was just another 90-minute party, really. It was absolutely brilliant.
And in terms of sort of Yeovil players, I know there's probably been quite a lot of cult players that have been there as you've climbed the leagues. Is there one particular player that you've always had a soft spot for? Doesn't have to be the best player. It could be someone like Lloyd Doyley at Watford for Davies. Is there one man who all the Yeovil fans love?
Right, it has to be Terry Skiverton, really. He's just he's been one of those players that was just... He was with us from non-league all the way to... all the way to League One, and he's still there on the bench now every week alongside Darren Way as well. Maybe not technically the best, but just they played the best because they put their, you know, put their heart and soul into it every week.
Peter, the question that everyone's asking really is, what do you make of the Football League's first ever girl group, Viva Pitch? You a big fan of their work?
I've seen some of their work. I'm not sure how well it went down with the Leeds fans when they made their debut on the pitch.
Do they do covers or have they got their own tracks?
I think they write all their own stuff, I'm sure. Yeah.
It's a bit of a dance number, but it's all in aid of a good cause.
Peter, your 2 minutes is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
There will be yet another edition of My Club next week, and there needs to be quite a lot of editions to cover the 40 clubs we still need to complete the set, to complete the 72 before the end of the season. If you support one of the sides we haven't covered, please can you get in touch. We are goingup.co.uk/contact or tweet us at Wagyu Podcast. These are the clubs which we haven't done. Okay, so we need fans of Accrington, Barnsley, Birmingham, Blackpool, Bolton, Brighton, Bristol Rovers, Burton Albion, Bury, Carlisle.
What would have been better is if you'd done it each of those ones in the correct regional accent for each place they were from.
Carlisle, you pick it up from there.
Cheltenham, Coventry, Crawley, Crewe, Dagenham and Redbridge, Derby, Doncaster, Exeter, Fleetwood, Gillingham.
It goes on. Hartlepool, Huddersfield, Leeds, Mansfield, Middlesbrough, Millwall, MK Dons, Newport, Northampton, Nottingham Forest, Notts County,
Plymouth, Port Vale, Preston, Rochdale, Sheffield Wednesday, Swindon, Walsall, Wigan and...
York City. So that is the list of 40 clubs we still need. So please do get in touch if you're a fan of those clubs. It's literally a 2-3 minute thing. You come on, tell us about your club, and then it's done. And you'll be on the show before the end of the season. At Wagyu Podcast on Twitter, or go to wearegoingup.co.uk/contact. Let's kick off our weekend review at the top of the Championship then. There is going to be at least one big promotion party in the East Midlands in May, you would think, because after 10 years away, Leicester City are surely going to be a Premier League side soon. Their incredible run continues in the league. 11 wins in the last 14 games. They beat Charlton 3-0 on Saturday. They are 13 points clear of third spot. They've got the best home record. They've scored 62 goals this season. They're on fire. Are you impressed in particular about the way he's juggled his forward options at Leicester? Because he's got a lot of players there to try and keep happy. Nugent, Vardy, Phillips, Dyer, Chris Wood and so on.
Yeah, well, the main two, though, are Nugent and Vardy. They're the ones who are grabbing the headlines. They're the ones who are scoring all the goals. Vardy, we've talked about, you know, fantastic improvement this season, and Pearson's been talking about, you know, he still thinks he's got a lot more to come from Vardy as he potentially becomes a Premier League player next season. Nugent, not just his goals, his all-round game, I think, has been excellent every time I've seen him this season. But then, you know, bringing in Phillips was a great little bit of business for them. Comes off the bench. Even if he doesn't score goals, he's involved in the play. He's got a few assists and a real key experienced head. He knows exactly what it's like to be. He's been promoted from this division a number of times, so he'd be a really good influence in the dressing room.
And credit,
there's no bad thing to say about Leicester at the moment.
Credit to the owners for sticking with the manager as well.
Very much so, because we all thought that Pearson would get the boot in the summer when he failed to get them up in the playoffs, and we were all surprised when he stayed. And he's been a model of stability, really, which is something you've not been used to at Leicester City for the last few years.
Below Leicester, then, this is where the real action took place at the weekend. Burnley 2, Derby 0, QPR 1, Leeds 1. And those results make it very much advantage Burnley. 13 games to go. Yeah. They've got 5-point cushion. Carl, albeit helped by that red card to Chris Martin. I think the first was for persistent fouling, and the second was for a dive.
Slipping over. I mean, Steve Clarke did raise it. The more you look at it, you think, well, maybe
was he tripped
he did
by Trippier?
Slip, but Chris Martin is one of those players that does get on a lot of people's nerves, shall we say? So the infringement.
Might be confusing him with the Coldplay frontman. I think it was harsh. I do think it was harsh. I don't think any of the fouls were
For once, I think Steve Clarence got absolutely spot on this, on the Football League.
The one
show.
That I directly before the first yellow, I didn't
think.
Yeah,
but was, if it's persistent fouling.
I didn't think it was a foul.
Exactly. I don't think they're all really bad fouls.
No. It's a big call to send him off as well. Because the ball went in the back of the net as well. It would have been 1-0.
Absolutely. It would completely change the game. And if you do look at the way his foot falls, whether he's deliberately planted his foot that way or not, there's absolutely no way of telling. But the evidence does suggest that he did, you know, land awkwardly on his ankle and go down. And I even think there may have been a slight bit of contact. So, you know, it wasn't anything like some of the terrible dives we've seen this season from other players. So I think he's been very harshly treated.
What a goal in that game from David Jones as well.
Fantastic.
The cushion, left-footed volley.
He scored one of those for Wolves, I think, a few years ago. But where this was where someone else flicked it up from a... just knocked it to him, rolled it from a free kick about a yard, and then he flicked it up like that and volleyed it in. It went in off the bar. So it's sort of something he's got on his locker, but this time sort of in open play, but a similar sort of situation. A lovely little pass from Ings, actually, and really good play from Kightley as well to not give up on the ball when it looked like Wisdom was going to get it. But Wisdom stumbled over. You know, it was a classic example of playing to the whistle. You know, play had sort of stopped, but the referee hadn't blown up, and Kightley was straight up on the ball like a whippet and put the ball into Ings. So a fantastic, you know, a fantastic finish, but a good bit of team play.
Well, they've got a big derby game coming up on Sunday. They go to Blackburn, Burnley. They'll probably win there if Blackburn play like they did in the derby game they just had at the weekend. But anyway, more on that in a bit. Derby are playing Millwall. QPR go to Birmingham, and if QPR can't win at Birmingham, where pretty much everyone else has won this season, then they will be in big trouble. I thought they played better against Leeds, Carl, but still didn't get the 3 points.
Yeah, but Leeds were a better team, I thought, actually. I mean, obviously McCormack's missed penalty. Conor Wickham had plenty of chances, and if he'd played more football this season, perhaps would have scored one or two of them. There was also the excellent moment, of course, with the disallowed goal in the last minute of a game.
Clint Hill. You've never scored a goal like that before, has he?
Yeah. No, of a football PA system playing the music at the grounds.
Oh, yeah.
Which, and it went on for several seconds. Player resumed again, and it was, fans were all celebrating. Player resumed. It was just one of those, it's just a very embarrassing moment. I mean, with Charlie Austin out.
It's going to be the playoffs, I think, isn't it?
The thing is, Charlie Austin's only scored 14. I mean, you know, it's not a bad total, but it's not like he scored 25 or 30.
True.
So it just shows you how much overall they have struggled. The next one down is Matt Phillips with 3, I think.
I mean, it's the over-reliance on their excellent defensive record, which has started faltering.
But Redknapp's still saying, I'm still the man. Just to go up, I'm the right man. And I think at this stage of the season, you'd be a folly to change manager.
But I think automatic promotion goals for fun.
You can't see it at this stage, can you? Very difficult indeed.
In terms of the playoffs, so the team that are in sort of the most, I mean, if QPR are in the least amount of form and have got the least momentum, Wigan have definitely got the most momentum. 4-1 win at the City Ground on Saturday. Uwe Rosler has won 9 of his 14 games in charge. And I was looking at actually all the clubs he's managed, Lillestrøm, Viking, Molde, Brentford and Wigan, and he's got a very good record at all of them.
Absolutely.
And it did just seem one of those appointments. He thought, that's going to work. I don't know if it's because it was a foreign manager and Martinez worked there. He just thought it was a good move to switch, and it's paying dividends.
Yeah, well, I think he suited the Wigan squad and the Wigan mentality of recent years far better than Owen Coyle did, obviously, there. And they made the change swiftly, which I think was a good bit of, you know, decision making from Dave Whelan. Few people raised their eyebrows when it happened, perhaps, but he recognised that he made a mistake.
Well, didn't we say on the fit and proper sackings test special that was one which didn't pass the fit and proper sackings test, but it's proved out to be the right decision.
Maybe it wouldn't be the first time we'd look silly, would it? But it turns out to be a great decision, and Rosler's really got something going there. I mean, Gomez had an excellent game at the weekend.
Waghorn as well on loan there. He was very involved with all the goals.
It's a very good squad they've got there, really, throughout the team. And Rosler's admitted that they are hunting for easily a playoff position now. I mean, it's unlikely they will get an automatic spot, but to consider they should be, you know, knocking someone like Forrest out of a playoff as well. Billy Davies admits his team are kind of hanging on for dear life at the moment, the number of injuries they've got.
They've got Andy Reid out for 6 weeks for hernia, Jack Hobbs out for the rest of the season, which has got to be a blow because he's been a very good player for them.
Yeah, well, Reid as well in particular, who's every time I've seen Forrest a few times on TV, and I've seen him live once as well this season, and Reid was the standout player from them each time I've seen them. You know, a model of consistency, and Hobbs is, you know, we've seen every time Jim's been on the show,
he's
lyrical about how good Jack Hobbs is. Well, he was a much sought after player in the transfer window. Forest did very well to secure his signature permanently. Big blow for them. They've got a few more injuries as well. I mean, before the loss last weekend, they had a 14 game unbeaten run, I think. So, you know, the wheels have only just fallen off, and if they can recover, they're still in a decent position. But, you know, cause for concern.
comical scenes at the Medeski on Saturday. Reading are now out of the playoffs after only drawing one all against eight men. Three red cards, a missed penalty and a ridiculous own goal. But I know they only went down to eight men in the last minute, but you kind of do need to be beating eight men if you you want to go up.
I had a mate who wrote on Facebook that this game cost him an eight-game accumulator. He had Reading to win, obviously. And when you can't beat eight men...
Sickener.
Yeah,
the
really
thing is, like you said, they went down to eight men late on, but for a large chunk of the game, it was 10 men, which should be enough when you're at home, really. Sometimes it does make it more difficult. Sometimes teams, you know, they'll fold back and they'll sit back and they'll make it very difficult for you to create chances. But you think, given, you know, the length of time where they had the advantage, given the disparity between the two squads, you'd think Reading should have, you know, would have done enough to win the game, and they didn't. They'll be really disappointed with that, because just like you say, Wigan now move up into that sixth spot, and that's a bit of a blow for them mentally.
Good wins for Ipswich and Brighton by a goal to nil. They're keeping the pressure up. Let's have a look at the situation down the bottom. No real change in the bottom six. I think Yeovil the only side actually to get a point in the bottom six at the weekend. But three of the sides down there, Barnsley, Doncaster and Blackpool, got an absolute shellacking, as I'm going to call it. They lost 14-0. They lost 14-0 collectively on Saturday. Well played Huddersfield, Bournemouth and Watford, but big problems at those clubs for Danny Wilson, Paul Dickhoff and Barry Ferguson. And I suppose Barry Ferguson's got the most to be concerned about, because that's 16 games without a win now.
Yeah, he's not the permanent boss.
But they don't seem to be appointing one.
He's questioning
whether he's the right man, isn't he? Apparently he came out to the press afterwards and sort of said, you know, I've got to ask myself, am I up to it?
Absolutely, and I know they have spoken to other people, including Neil Warnock.
Was
approached earlier in the season, but didn't fancy it. But he has come out, Barry Ferguson,
got a nice beach
after the game.
Enjoy it all there.
I'm not quite sure. It's the same as Devon or Cornwall, wherever he lives. But Ferguson has questioned his own ability, whether he's good enough to do the job. Can I motivate the players? I'm not so sure, he said after the game. So, you know, if he's not got confidence in himself, then that isn't, you know, writing's on the wall, I'd say, really, for his burgeoning managerial career. But the players don't look interested, do they? 16 games without a win, they're plummeting. You know, it's only that excellent start they had in the first month that's keeping them out of trouble. But if they keep going, they'll be in the relegation zone for long.
Rarely when a team plummets like this, they don't get out of it. They do just get sucked into it. There are still teams below them. And what is it? 8 points and no Charlton have still got a couple of games in hand. It's unlikely they'd win all of those.
Other sort of hammering that we haven't talked about was Blackburn. Didn't see that one coming. Losing 4-0 at Bolton. Their biggest derby win in 86 years. Bolton have got a couple of wins at a very good time of the season. They've played crap for however many months we've had, and then they've pulled out a couple of wins to move them clear.
It's basically what they did last season, wasn't it?
I think you're giving them a bit too much credit, really, that they're saying that. Because last season, remember, they were right on the cusp of the playoffs, and this season is a major disappointment. They did recover from a bad start, but they recovered spectacularly and motored up the division. This season, they had a poor start, a poor middle, when they're having, you know, slightly above average finishes, things stand. So this season has been a real disappointment, and has to be viewed as a failure by Friedman.
And I do see as well what's happened this Monday evening as we record this. Stuart Holden has played in the under-21s game and was taken off injured after 20 minutes.
Middlesbrough went another game without a goal. They technically,
seven in a row,
technically did have a goal, but the linesman didn't see it. How he missed that, I have no idea.
But you know what they've done? Interestingly, I saw this earlier on. Craig Hignett has now been appointed as assistant manager to Aitor Karanka.
Club legend.
That might help him out a bit. I mean, they've not been battered, have they? They've had a few narrow defeats. But they just silly, they, you know, so defensively, maybe they've tightened up a little bit, but they just simply cannot score to save their lives. And that's a real concern. Because they have got a few strikers there. And, well, they did lose Emnes and Djukovic in the
Danny
tournament.
Graham doesn't look like he can buy a goal at the moment. No. Carson Young as well has been found guilty in Hong Kong of money laundering. We talked about Birmingham a few weeks ago. Not quite sure what that will mean just yet.
Well, he could, if the sentencing...
it's on Friday, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on Friday. He could be sentenced to 14 years in prison. But Birmingham have said that it won't affect us because we've already, we've already kind of moved in anticipation of this to separate ourselves, you know, from him. So I don't think it will have that much of an impact, really, on Birmingham City's day-to-day running.
Into League One then. Wins again for the top two of the weekend. Leighton Orient beat Colchester 2-1. Wolves, though, top on goal difference now. They beat Port Vale 3-0. Seven wins in a row, five clean sheets in a row. So credit to that defence. Carlo Kamey, Scott Goulburn, Danny Bart, Sam Ricketts, Richard Stearman. And Wolves very much looking like the real deal at the moment.
It's good you mentioned the defence. Danny Bart and Richard Stearman. I was reading the Football League paper this weekend, and Danny Bart was in there talking about how much he's enjoying playing alongside Stearman, how much their partnership has come on. Bart's a very promising player who had a good loan spell at Sheffield Wednesday when they were in League One, when they got promoted.
Needs to sort out the spelling of his name, though.
Well, on Twitter, he does very much state, he does give you guidance as,
oh,
to,
does
how,
he?
To, as
okay.
how to phonetically...
I don't follow him, unfortunately.
...pronounce his name, which is help for me, because I was, when he was at Sheffield Wednesday, I kept calling him Bath. But yeah, fantastic young player, really promising for them, and they've come good at the right time, haven't they? But Brentford, after that massive run, they lost, now they've drawn nil-nil Carlisle.
Look how competitive it is at the top there, because Orient were unbeaten in 11, they lost one game, they dropped out of the top two. Brentford have gone 19 games unbeaten, they've not won in two games and they're out of the top two. And if you look below them, Preston, 12 games without defeat, and you've got Rotherham, I think 9 games without defeat, won 6-0 against Notts County. They all just keep on winning.
Brentford with the inexperienced managers, perhaps something that might be a concern, when you've got people like Simon Grayson and Kenny Jackets that can steer them through what is going to be a very nervous time for the players. So perhaps, I mean, let's be honest, I think probably the top, well, certainly the top five will now be guaranteed to be there come 46 games. But it's just
a shuffle of where they'll be placed. It's not a bad point that you make. You know, there are some really experienced managers in that top six. You know, Mark Warburton is the odd one out there as far as that's concerned. But that doesn't necessarily mean that's a bad thing. He's done very well. And he's very highly thought of, you know, within the game in terms of his coaching experience. He was working in the City about 14 or so years ago, I believe. He took the decision to leave a very highly paid job in the City to become a football coach, and it has paid dividends. But they have got two games in hand, crucially, on Leighton Orient, who are above them. And they're only 3 points behind them. So if they, you know, if they get some points out of that, they'll be back in the top two.
Peterborough lost 1-0 at Crawley on Saturday, but they're still pretty comfortable in that final playoff spot. Sheffield United into the top half. Unbelievable turnaround. 7 wins in a row in all competitions going into that quarterfinal the weekend. Down at the bottom, though, Stevenage and Bristol City, the big winners. Bristol City beat Gillingham 2-1. Stevenage came back from 2-1 down to win at Bradford, and two brilliant goals from Luke Freeman, who's a player you've sung the praises of many times.
Yeah, I haven't heard too much from him this season. Obviously, Stevenage being right down at the bottom of the league. I don't know whether he's been struggling in a poor team or whether he's been dragged down with it and not been too good himself. But he certainly does have a lot of talent. And a few times I've seen him. I've watched Stevenage a couple of times live over the last few years. I've got a friend of mine who's a Stevenage fan. And you can tell that he's, you know, come through at a higher level. He did play for Arsenal as a youngster. And he does have that touch of class about him, you know, when he has his day.
Notts County bottom. And now they've shipped 22 goals in their last six games. Six defeats in that run. Lost 6-0 on Saturday. A couple of dreadful goals they gave away as well. And I heard an interview, I think, with Radio Nottingham that Sean Derry did afterwards, and he was adamant, we are going to get out of this. We're going to get out of this. But it doesn't look like the way at the moment, does it?
I mean, it looks like the teams are down there almost to stay now. The team that obviously pulled away was Sheffield United, and look where they are now. So it really... I mean, it's idiotic to suggest which teams will go down because it's still very tight, but you really expect any of these teams to come on a run? We thought Notts County would have
gone... to the wire, isn't
seven
it?
Seven or eight games ago, and now they've sunk back. And
it's the
games,
though, isn't it, as well?
Term.
The uneven games. Yeah. Shrewsbury and Stevenage have played two games less than Notts County and Crewe and Bristol City. Colchester have only played 31 games, up in 19 points. So that once those games are played out, depending on which way they go, then you get a truer picture of what's going to happen. I mean, but it's worrying for Notts County fans, because there was a little bit of a resurgence, wasn't there, after the first few weeks when Sean Derry came in, but it's disappeared now. I don't know whether that, you know, is it to do with the managers, or has he just got nothing to work with? You know, it was obviously a tough job going in there, and it was a big risk taking Sean Derry on. I know he's got Greg Abbott with him there alongside him, but it's not worked out that well so far.
And of course, if Crawley do win all their games that are left in hand, they'll go up to seventh at the moment as it stands. Their first home game in 2 months, apparently.
Yeah, that win over Peterborough. Well, unless there's a goal in the next 10 seconds, Chesterfield are going to draw 0-0 with Portsmouth on Monday night as we record. The game's just about to end. So they stay top. Just
good result for Pompey.
Yeah, just below them, Scunthorpe a second. They kept up their unbeaten run, but they were held 2-0 at Newport. Rochdale flying, 3-0 win over Oxford at Spotland. Hat-trick from Scott Hogan. He's got two hat-tricks in a few weeks now.
Big win.
16 goals this season, and Oxford had one of the best away records in the Football League. Very big win. And on Friday, El Clasico at Gig Lane, Bury versus Rochdale. Sky Sports 2 at 7:30. Hill against Flitcroft, and you said there's quite a good thing in the Football League paper about it.
Yeah, in the Football League paper, there's a nice little piece on the pair of them talking about their relationship, and obviously they worked together for many years at Rochdale previously before Flitcroft took over at Barnsley after Hill was sacked. And just talking a little bit about their sort of personal relationship away from football as well. They talk about each other like they're brothers, really. So it's quite interesting. And Hill actually says, quite an interesting line, was that he'd happily work under Flitcroft in the future as an assistant.
Interesting.
At some point. So interesting. I wonder if that ever happened.
Well,
but not at the moment, because they're both flying.
Yes. Well, we lost at the weekend, but yes. I'm looking forward to Friday anyway. We'll see how it goes. Two goals from Billy Key helped Burton beat Accrington 2-1. They're in fourth now. Fleetwood having a bit of a wobble below them. Three games without a goal, just 1 point from nine. And as I mentioned earlier, Southend, nine games without a win, pretty much since we had Chris Phillips on the show. Yeah. Yep. Down at the bottom, Northampton, although they didn't win on Saturday, they're looking good under Chris Wilder. They've won a couple of games at home. They've gone on a little unbeaten run. Torquay are the team, though, you're worrying about now. They're getting cut adrift at the bottom there. They lost again at the weekend, 3-0 at Hartlepool. 7 points from safety. Jim Proudfoot, when we had him on the show earlier in the season, wasn't too confident of them staying up. They've changed the manager, and not much has changed, unfortunately.
No, nothing.
7 points adrift at this stage of the season. It's not good. Minus 20 goal difference as well, which is almost an extra point. When you look at Accrington, minus 8, Wickham minus 4. Wickham had, you know, that terrible run, didn't they? But there's still a reasonable enough cushion for them to not lose too much sleep, and it doesn't look good. It doesn't even look that good for Northampton, really, even though you said they've been on a good little run. I suppose another win and they're right up there, but you know, you'd be worried, wouldn't you?
You have to think about, I've mentioned it already, about momentum is a point in the season. If Northampton do pick up a couple, it's a big if, because they've been
only 4 points. I think they have got much more of a chance.
You look at the huge group above them of teams on 39, they've won 38 and 37, but one that, you know, perhaps you do want to just pay attention to is Morecambe on 40, who haven't won in God knows how long. And are going to start sinking like a stone. It happens with teams in this division. Teams do drop. Now, you haven't got the money to go out and splash out on players, or, you know, bring in loan players and what have you. People don't want to go there. And so, I mean,
the pies, though, they want to go there. They've got the best pies in the country.
They are sat in 15th, and hey, one victory will no doubt mean musings here are completely worthless, but it's just worth considering.
FA Cup quarterfinals then at the weekend. Quick predictions: Sheffield United against Charlton and Manchester City against Wigan.
I think Wigan. I don't think there'll be, we'll see a repeat of last season's heroics at Wembley. I think Man City will overcome Wigan. I don't think it'll be an easy game, but Charlton, Sheffield United. I think I'm going to back Sheffield United again. I think in this one, yeah.
Carl.
Yeah, I'd say Sheffield United. I think
they've got less to lose, haven't they? I think that their season's, you know, just in running to a mid-table finish in League One. The Cup is right there for them. They're on a fantastic run of form. Charlton really, you know, they've enjoyed the Cup run, and it's probably have given them a bit of a new lease of life, where they really need to get back to that league and win those three games in hand that they've got and focus on staying in the Championship. And I think perhaps that might be on the mind of the players. I might be wrong, but I think
Sheffield United being at home, I think, will probably help as well. They have a full house there as well, at Bramall Lane. They won't be playing on that terrible pitch down at the Valley.
I did love the scenes, though, in the game against Sheffield Wednesday when Charlton won. At the end, where Chris Powell ran
crossbar.
Over to the crossbar and just Brilliant. Pulled himself up. You could see how much it meant to him. And there has still been little murmurings that, as a result of the takeover, that he could potentially lose his job in the summer. I think he's out of contract along with a number of players in the summer, and I'd be desperately disappointed for him if that was the case, because I think he's a good man and he clearly loves the club.
Right, that is pretty much it. Thank you very much for listening. To get in touch on Twitter, it is at Wagyu Podcast. The SoundCloud page is soundcloud.com/Wagyu Podcast, and the blogs and the website are wearegoingup.co.uk. And if you'd like to download a free audiobook of your choosing, all thanks to Audible, you've got 100,000 to pick from. Plenty of really good sports stuff on there. All you need to do is go to audible.co.uk/goingup and take advantage of the offer there. Right, that is pretty much it. Thank you, DC.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you for having me.
And we need to make it our ambition to go and see Corn FC, don't we, at some point this season.
Or what was the team they beat in the extra... It's hard to say preliminary, isn't it?
Very hard.
Who's the preliminary round
for the preliminary round. There you go.
What would be the... I'm trying to come up with the equivalent, the like... non-vegetarian equivalent of corn in terms of Walsall, Wall's End.
Doesn't get in really touch work, with any suggestions. I think we'll knock it on the head there. We'll speak to you in 7 days' time.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.